Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk Mariners. Let's talk Bryce Miller. Let's talk pitching with ESPN and MLB Network analyst Xavier Scruggs joining us now in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Xavier, how's it going?
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for having me.
We are happy to have you on, and I actually want to start with a recent breakdown you did. It was just a couple days ago of Bryce Miller. You talked about a really interesting adjustment he made specifically, I think, to lefties. Could you tell us a bit more?
Yeah, I think the one thing about Bryce Miller is he's learned a lot from last year, but you continue to make adjustments. And I think the coolest thing about what he's done is he's brought in the split finger, a pitch that now goes away from lefties and into lefties as well. He needed something that went away from lefties. And it was a pitch that he had kind of toyed with last year, but he didn't really implement it into his arsenal during the season. He went into the offseason, worked on it a lot, and now it's a devastating pitch when you talk about how he's able to throw it to lefties and righties, getting a lot of swing and miss, a lot of weak contact, and it's one of those pitches now that guys have to look at as a real weapon going against him. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's had a lot of success early on this season is now he's unpredictable. Before you could kind of look at that fastball, look at the sweeper, and look at some of the off speed and figure that it was going to come with two strikes, but now he can introduce that split finger at any time and keep guys off balance all throughout the at-bat.
What's the process of adding a new pitch? Do you just sit there and, you know what, I need something else? And then, what coach do you go to? What do you assume the process was like with him adding that pitch?
Yeah, I think he looks at, you know, some of the other guys in the rotation and sees them working on their craft and introducing a split finger. And then he kind of was, just from information that I heard, is something that he wanted to implement last year, but really started diving into it this offseason and really trying to figure out how to make it move the right way. And you lean on multiple pitching coaches, right? You can lean on guys that you work with in the offseason. I know he goes back to Texas A&M, and works there with those guys. So just being able to use that pitch, but also trust it. That's the biggest part, is going into trusting a new adjustment. And the same thing goes for a hitter. You have to learn to live with it and just trust it even when it's not working. And that's something that he's done very well this season.
Hey, I think that sometimes here in Seattle, no surprise given the playoff drought that was here, we can tend to be down on one part of the team. It can always be like, oh, they didn't do enough in free agency, or, oh, you didn't do this. And I think that I always need to remind myself to be grateful of things that this team has done really well, which is why I appreciate that you're really high on the starting rotation. You've had amazing analysis and great things to say about them. What to you stands out most about this group?
I think the biggest thing is that most of these guys are homegrown, right? You look at even the Emerson Hancock that doesn't get talked about much, George Kirby, Gilbert, and Bryce. They all are guys that have come up in the organization and all within pretty much the same time. So to have those guys developed all within a short amount of time to be impactful at the big league level is extremely important. But also, you know, you can look at the fact that this is a part of our development program, right? A part of the minor leagues. You can look at that as we don't have to go get guys off of free agency. We can develop great pitching. And I think that's something that you got to take solace in the Mariners organization. But then also know that they are willing to spend at times. So you look at the Dodgers, you look at the Braves, you look at, you know, some of these teams that do such a great job on both sides. They have the money to spend, but also they develop really well. That's what the Mariners are starting to do.
I know it's early in the season. It's hard to kind of make predictions. But as of right now, what you see from this team, what do you think the ceiling is for the Mariners? We've had some experts come on the show and before the season started and go, look, man, we think they're a worse World Series caliber type of team. The start of the season kind of made us question that a little bit. But we're in the region. We're connected to the team, so we're a bit biased. I'm interested to hear what you think the ceiling is.
Yeah, one of the reasons why they can be a World Series caliber team, and I would say that's definitely the ceiling. The sky's the limit for them because they have the starting pitching. But a lot of it leans on Julio Rodriguez, right? Like, if we saw this last year when he started to take off, the team was different, and everybody else kind of fed off of that. He's that type of player. He's a superstar, and he's gotten off to a slower start from a power standpoint. But, you know, once he starts to go, and we saw it last night, what he did against the Rangers, if he starts doing those types of things more consistently, then you're talking about a team that can feed off of him, plus some of the guys that they brought in. We've got to see Jorge Polanco do a better job, right? He's a guy that came over from the Twins. They expect a lot out of him. Same thing goes for a guy like Mitch Garver. He's got a lot of power, had a good season last year with the Rangers. They need that. They need the old Mitch Haniger from what he was doing back when he was with the team prior to this stint. So a lot of it counts on the offense, but I definitely see them being a World Series caliber team.
Xavier, I'm going to stick with Julio for just a minute. Now, when he debuted with Seattle and broke camp with them a couple years ago, he was one of the top prospects in baseball. So it's not like he was a secret, right? It's not like he was under the radar. But I think with any player who you feel is special, there's always a moment when you kind of think like, oh, I think this guy could be it. Like, I think this could be real. Was there a moment for you when it comes to Julio?
Honestly, I've been lucky enough. I live in Tampa, and I actually see Julio in the off season and him training.
Oh, nice.
And the off season before his rookie season, it told me a lot about the work ethic that he has, but it also told me a lot about the focus. And just seeing the way he took batting practice during the off season, seeing the way that he went about his training as far as speed. One of the things for him was, he understood that he had some injury issues in the lower extremities, and he went to Yo Murphy, a guy that trains track athletes and football wide receivers and defensive backs, and learned how to get his speed right with that trainer. So it told me about where his focus is and intention is as far as being one of the best. And then you go out there and see what he does on the field. And when he's out there doing Julio Rodriguez things, he's the best player by far on the field.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the football type of, not training, but, you know, going to a guy who trains those type of people, because I watch Julio in center field, especially this year, and he's covering a lot of ground, man. When it comes to defensively, where do you think he ranks right now as far as center fielders in the show?
Yeah, he's one of the best. I mean, that's why he does the no-fly zone X symbol when he robs home runs. He's a guy that steals a lot of base hits. You know, he's one of the top center fielders defensively in our game, and I love the fact that he doesn't let his offense affect the defensive side. We've learned now that Julio is a slow starter offensively, but he still goes and gets the baseball defensively, and that's got to be – so if you're Scott Service, you're looking at that, and that's got to be one of the biggest things that you can take confidence in, because the other players on the team look towards Julio and what he's doing. If they see him staying on point defensively, that's going to be the bar set, for example, for those players as well.
Hey, you mentioned you can see a world where the Mariners are a World Series caliber team just because of the pitching they have and obviously the star power with Julio. It's not going to be easy, but the pieces are there. It'll be an easier road if they do win the division. So just, you know, a couple minutes here asking about the AL West. It's been weird, man. It's been a weird start for Houston. I'm so used to seeing Houston just be dominant, and I can't tell if this slow start for them is real or the byproduct of having so many injuries with their rotation. What do you see with them right now?
I agree with you. I think it's a little hard to tell right now because obviously, Verlander was out toward the beginning of the season, and then Framber Valdez has now been out. But both of those guys, obviously, Verlander's back, but Framber should be back here soon. I think we'll get a better idea when those two are back in the rotation. The same thing with Christian Javier, who missed his last start. I think we'll get a better idea then. The offense has been okay, but this is a team that's been to 7 straight ALCSs. Like, it's hard to really discount
right.
This team, because you know they play a full 162. We can't just assume that they're not going to make the postseason because of a tough start. It is a long, long season. So I expect them to be kind of where they've been over the last few years. And the same thing goes for the Rangers, right? This is a team that won the World Series last year. The offense is going to erupt. The pitching is going to be there, but mostly the offense is going to carry that Rangers team.
Shohei was a big topic, still is kind of in the baseball world. Somehow he's been able to stay focused and still put together a pretty good season so far. Have you been surprised by his production, or did you feel like his mental makeup and just who Shohei is will allow him to kind of block everything else out and focus on baseball?
Yeah, it was hard for me. It's hard for me to be surprised because I think one of the things in this offseason, knowing that he had the elbow surgery, knowing that he was going to just focus on hitting, I felt like that may give him an opportunity to elevate his offensive side. And yes, there's been a lot of stuff swirling around him, but he's such a focused player that not a lot affects him personally, mentally, and physically. So I think that was what I kind of wanted to figure out is can he still transition into a different lineup the same way and have that same success he had with the Angels? And honestly, it's been no issues. And you have to look towards having multiple MVPs also alongside with him. That makes the job a little bit easier for him to go about just his business because they can't really just walk Shohei because he has Mookie Betts there and Freddie Freeman alongside of him. So as much as I want to say we're used to seeing Shohei have the success, it's also something we have to continue to appreciate because we're not seeing another player do what Shohei has ever done.
He is ESPN and MLB Network analyst Xavier Scruggs, kind enough to join us to talk about the Mariners and this rotation. Thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, see ya. Before we get to headline rewrites, I thought Xavier's point about, and I saw him do a video breakdown last year, so he's kind of been on it in terms of, you know, really highlighting the Mariners rotation. But I liked his angle of saying, look, obviously, you know, they're great. Obviously, they're one of the best rotations in baseball. Everyone knows that. But it is especially impressive, doubly impressive, when you consider that so many of these guys have been drafted and developed by this team itself.
Yeah, that's the Mariners' claim to fame so far is that, look, we got the arms, we developed the arms, and we're hoping that they add the analysis in other positions to this, right? If Rojas can continue to do some good things, if Polanco, yeah, I wouldn't say he's in a slump right now, but he's not doing what he did the last series. If they could be right in those other areas, then that's how they become the contenders that we've heard during the preseason, before the season even started. We kept hearing that, and I'm looking at the lineup, and I'm saying, well, a lot has to go right to support these arms. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's good for the Mariners. They have a good reputation when it comes to that, but keep adding to that, man, and you know, we've seen glimpses of it so far. It's all about just putting it all together.
Count Devin Witherspoon as a fan of Michael Penix. He had some good things to say. That's coming up in NFL headlines right now. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one. Long time coming, but the Heisman Trust announced today that they're reinstating Reggie Bush's 2005 Heisman Trophy. They cited enormous changes in the college football landscape as the reason. What's the real headline?
Justin, the Heisman Trust did something they should have done years ago.
They're just, you know what, NCAA, you're late on a lot of stuff. You're extremely late here, but at least you got it done. There was no denying that Reggie Bush was the best football player in the country that year. You can say it every year he was in college, at least in the mix. 1,700 yards on the ground, over 400 yards receiving that year in 2005. That team was so dang good. I used to stand up and watch that offense go to work and see what Reggie was going to do, what Lindale was going to do. Steve Smith was on the squad at the time. I mean, you had at least 10 to 11 guys play some type of NFL football off of that squad. Very impressive. I'm happy it got done. Reggie Bush is the best football player I've seen with my own eyes. He just made the game look easy. I remember against Washington State at our house, he took a punt, ran all the way to the right, reversed it to the left, went halfway back to the right, got up the gut. I mean, he made it look like recess in elementary school, and a sixth grader came and kicked it with the fourth graders and got busy. That's the way it looked, man. Reggie Bush, I'm glad you got your trophy, but we all knew or all know who was a Heisman Trophy winner in 2005.
I just can't believe the efforts to which his own school, the NCAA, went to almost like embarrass him. Like, I know it's a violation, but your family receiving gifts or your family receiving money or anything like that is not the same in terms of like the shame that you might feel as a school or the embarrassment you might feel or the hit your reputation would take as like an actual crime. It's just an NCAA violation when everyone and their mom agrees that those rules are stupid. But like I was looking back up and like reading back on this story because I'd forgotten so many parts of it. And this is something that no USC fan forgets, but I had completely forgotten that in 2010, the school took down all like Reggie Bush jerseys and murals and anything. Like they stripped the USC facilities of Reggie Bush's presence.
Did my man get like caught cheating on a test or a lab or something like that?
Or
was he walking around campus
or
being disrespectful to his the co-eds there?
It's
crazy how they didn't separate that. They just lumped it all together and said, we're going to make an example of this young man. It was ridiculous.
It really is so stupid. And that there were like, again, it's a violate, like, okay, you violated the rules, but the extent to which USC, the adults around him. I mean, heck, I don't want to be the one to say it, but Pete Carroll leaving the school, like he kind of took the fall in a way and shouldered the blame for so much of the shame that that program felt.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so unfair. And now if I were him, maybe this means something to him, but I'd be like, all right, thanks.
I think it does mean something. He posted something on Instagram pretty much, you know, saying he's glad he got it back and it's where it's supposed to be. So it definitely meant something to him. I think during the time where it went down and up to now, he put up a good front like he didn't really care about that. But I'm sure he felt it.
This quote, it's from The Athletic back in 2020, just stuck with me. Him talking about finding out about the sanctions. So he was looking back. He said, I felt the sanctions felt like I died when I had to hear there weren't going to be scholarships for kids because of me or because of something connected to me. I'm still not over that.
No.
He's not a bad dude.
He's not. I've met Reggie a couple times.
Yeah.
He's a good dude, man.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two per Albert Breer, Troy Fautanu with a knee and Michael Penix with a knee and shoulder have been medically flagged by some NFL teams leading up to the draft. What's the real headline?
Yeah, I agree. Fautanu should definitely fall past pick number 15. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, red flag.
I'm raising the red flag as well. That
don't
is a problem. I don't think he should be a top 15 pick.
Too much of a risk.
Way too much of a risk. Don't do it.
For
do
15?
Not take him.
Yeah,
no.
But 16, I think that's cool.
I could see it 16.
That's
I could
cool.
totally see it 16, that being fine. But yeah, top 15, he should absolutely fall out.
Here's my question. What football player goes through 3 to 4 years in college and doesn't have some type of injury? It happens. It's rare. I don't think I play with anybody who practiced every practice, who played every single game. It goes down. But again, this is just how you separate things. This is people trying to devalue Fautanu, and I'm all good for that. People trying to devalue Michael Penix, I'm not all good with that. This is just how it goes, man. But yes, go ahead and believe it. It's a red flag. Hawks pick him up at 16.
Well, and I get, if I was a GM, I would find anything that would give me pause and pay attention to it. Because I would be trying my very best to make the right decision with limited information and without an ability, as few people have, to correctly predict the future. If you do have that ability, I'd love to know. but we've also seen the opposite being true. You know a player who didn't suffer a single injury in college? Rashad Penny. He came here and he got hurt in training camp.
Yeah.
Like it's just, and couldn't stay healthy and couldn't stay on the field. Like, yes, it is worth flagging a medical history, but the lack of one does not make someone a sure thing.
That's a bar right there.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Lions made Amon-Ra St. Brown the highest paid receiver in the league, signing him to a four-year extension worth $120 million and 77 of that guaranteed. What's the real headline?
Matt, would you like to read the real headline?
With all that money, he's going to go from Amon-Ra St. Brown to Amon-Ra St. Gold.
Oh!
Let's go.
Bars! Oh, with the dab!
Did he dab?
Okay, Matt! Okay, Matt!
Oh, my son, I do that to embarrass him all the time, Matt. Dad, that's so cringe. That's so 4 or 5 years ago. I go, for you, that's like 15 years, dog.
Yeah.
For me, that was a few months ago.
Bro.
For me, I just found out about this, man. Let me hang on to this.
No, good for Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's worth it, man. He's an undersized receiver. He works his you-know-what off. He's a great route runner. The yards after the catch. he's big in what Detroit is doing over there. So he got paid, and his boy got paid on that offensive line.
Yeah, here, and we're going to talk about that in NFL headlines. My lingering question from this, Amon-Ra St. Brown, currently the highest paid wide receiver in terms of average annual value. CeeDee Lamb hasn't been paid. Is this resetting the market? Because Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of those players where, like, I don't know that when Tyreek Hill was paid the most, when Hopkins was paid the most, I think for a while teams and fans would be like, well, are you better than him? I think there are players who would make their case of being better than Amon-Ra St. Brown, even though I think St. Brown is amazing.
Well, we all know that NFL contracts are based off of timing. If you have an above average season, you're going to get paid in this league. If you are on a second contract and you do average type things, they're going to pay you. It's timing. You got to be talented, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is talented. There are a lot of talented receivers and quarterbacks and running backs in this league, but it's all about the timing and about what your production looks like when it's time to get paid. I would pick five or six other receivers over Amon-Ra St. Brown, but they're not free agents.
Who are those guys?
I would pick Devontae, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill. I'm sure there are another floating around out there.
Because I think the closest, the one that most people would be like unsure on, is Ja'Marr Chase.
Ja'Marr Chase?
I think so.
Really? Nah, big playability. Don't forget about what he's done. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is probably the more violent player. You watch him play, he's a violent football player. Ja'Marr Chase is just smooth as heck. Amon-Ra St. Brown is better at going across the middle and taking those hits. Ja'Marr's not going to do that. He stretches the field vertically, posts, comebacks, goes. Just different type of football player. Yeah. And you need both on your team, though.
We're going to be taking a look around the NFC West ahead of the first round of the NFL draft tomorrow, where these teams actually have picks. Look at you, Rams. Before we get to it, though, we're taking a look around the NFL. Devin Witherspoon, a big fan of Michael Penix Jr., will tell you what he said next.
Sign up for Mariners Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariners Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
We are taking a look around the NFL, but we're going to start with a current Seahawk. Devin Witherspoon was on an X.com Spaces video with Daniel Jeremiah and NFL Network's Tom Pelissero talking about the draft, and they asked him what he thought about Michael Penix.
But I am high on Michael Penix. I'm very high on Michael Penix. Because I watched him in his growth from Indiana when then he transitioned to Washington. And he's just like, the kid can make every throw. And it's not really on the run. It's more pocket pass. Like, he got pocket presence. So for me, I'm like, the kid, he has poise when he in the pocket. So it's like, it's hard to get him off his game, you know, but I'm very high on him.
I always like hearing what defensive players have to say about quarterbacks.
Especially when someone is probably younger than Penix is calling him a kid.
I actually looked it up.
Is he the same age? Is he older? What is he?
So he's 23. Michael Penix is 6 months older.
Okay, cool.
So they're the same age.
That was the first thing that stuck out to me. But yeah, you're right, because DBs, they are influenced by the eyes of the quarterback, the route combinations. So they see the game a bit differently. Even when I draw up plays, if we're looking at a screen, the offense is on the bottom, the defense is on the top. When the defense draws plays, they flip it. So that right there just lets you know, like, the perspective of the game is completely different when you have one of the best rookie corners, or one of the best corners in general in the league, giving high praise to a guy like Michael Penix. I think you got to listen. So good for Penix.
The Bengals have picked up a fifth-year option on Ja'Marr Chase to the surprise of literally no one. Congratulations, Ja'Marr, and on the Bengals for making the most obvious decision.
Ja'Marr, man, he's special. You got to keep him with Joe Burrow as long as you can. Eventually, money is going to separate these guys. You're going to have to make some moves, but they're still young. They're the only guys to take down Patrick Mahomes other than the great Tom Brady. There's something going on with Cincinnati, especially when Joe Burrow is completely healthy. But again, you look at that division. Goodness gracious. It's still the best division of football, in my opinion. We'll see if the Pittsburgh Steelers can reinsert themselves into that conversation, even though they didn't make the playoffs with a Kenny Pickett at quarterback. Who's going to be the starter there? But to keep up with everyone else in your division, you got to sign guys like Ja'Marr.
Does Ja'Marr Chase have the ceiling to be the best wide receiver in football?
I think he has the ceiling to have years where he's the best wide receiver. Okay. I think as a wide receiver,
he's so interesting.
It flip-flops, man. I mean,
yeah.
Couple years D-Hop was, then Devontae was, then Tyreek was, Cooper Kupp was 1 year. He can get into the mix, but at the receiver spot, it bounces.
Where does Justin Jefferson play in here?
Justin Jefferson. Goodness gracious.
That's what I'm saying.
To me, I think he is the best receiver in the league right now, Justin Jefferson.
So here's why I'm asking so much about wide receivers. Obviously, I'm going to get to the story, but Amon-Ra St. Brown and the Lions reached an agreement on a new extension. That's our next story. We'll talk about that more specifically in a minute. But it's made me think about, like, okay, how would I rank the best wide receivers in the league? Who do I think is the best? Not to pocket watch. We don't want a pocket watch violation. You already got one today. Excuse me. I have none. We know that CeeDee Lamb is probably going to get more than Amon-Ra St. Brown, which means CeeDee Lamb is going to be getting more than Tyreek Hill. And then you have Justin Jefferson. You know what I mean? Like, you're looking at all these names, and all of them are so good. And it's hard to point to one and say, you don't deserve to get paid as much as this guy. So I keep asking you questions thinking, like, but who might you choose? Like, who's the best right now? Right now, you're building your team. Who's wide receiver one?
Justin Jefferson.
Over Tyreek.
In 10 games.
Over Hop, because over DeAndre.
Justin Jefferson is a route runner. Like, Tyreek Hill, his routes aren't bad.
Yeah.
But he's more reliant on his speed. It's north-south. That's going to slow down eventually. Justin Jefferson, in 10 games, went over 1,000 yards in 10 games last year. I think he's the most complete receiver. But everyone, I mean, look, we didn't even mention A.J. Brown.
No.
We didn't mention Brandon Ayuk.
I didn't mention any of them.
And the receiver that slept on the most in this league, too, I think, Amari Cooper still puts up numbers this year.
He is
or every
slept
year.
On.
He's a slept on, man. It's crazy the talent that's out there.
The Lions, speaking of, and wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, now we're getting to this story, have reached an agreement on a four-year extension worth up to $120 million with $77 million guaranteed. That means he's getting more than the $30 million per year, just a hair more, than Tyreek Hill currently makes. He also gets more than the $75 million guaranteed that Cooper Kupp currently makes, so that's where that highest paid wide receiver number comes from. I thought this was a fun fact. The four highest paid wide receivers in the league in terms of average value, Tyreek Hill, Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, and now Amon-Ra St. Brown, were all drafted in the second round or later.
Mm.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I like that. That means... And this is the way the receiver position is going. Guys, like this draft in general, there's about 10 to 12 receivers who are going to get drafted who I think are going to have at least 400 to 500 yards their first year. Mm-hmm. There's going to be 2 to 3 in this draft that are going to have over 1,000 yards this year. The way the game is and the way these guys are developing leads to this. And Amon-Ra St. Brown had 1,500 yards last year. He was third in the league behind CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek Hill. Guys are coming into this league ready to go. And that's unfortunate because other positions are coming into the league ready to go. And I think that puts more pressure on the quarterbacks to come in ready to go. But there's more responsibility with the quarterbacks. But yeah, man, Amon-Ra St. Brown, good for you. But there are a lot of good pass catchers in this league.
From the 253, Tyler Lockett is the most slept on receiver. I think Tyler Lockett is a great receiver who is slept on. But I think that we've got a little bit of local bias when we point to that.
He has slept on.
He is 1,000%. But is he consistent? Better? Would you rather have Tyler Lockett or Amari Cooper?
Why you make me do this to my guy?
I would. I think Amari Cooper is a better receiver than Tyler.
I'd probably take Amari Cooper too.
And I think Tyler Lockett's an amazing receiver.
Yeah, I think Tyler Lockett is perfect for Seattle in this situation.
Yeah.
Here. You have the big boy outside DK. You need a guy like Tyler Lockett who can do a little bit of everything. And then you got the youngster in JSN. He holds more value in Seattle than I think he would anywhere else.
Someone said, didn't you just say Ja'Marr Chase was the one people had questions about? Now nobody's surprised. No. I mean, no one's surprised they picked up his fifth-year option. He obviously is going to be there. They're going to keep him. I think when you look at a list of the best wide receivers and then figure out where Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think the biggest debate would come between Ja'Marr Chase versus Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, I think most people would say, oh, Tyreek Hill. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, Davante Adams. Yeah, of course.
And they're like four.
But it's Jamar's younger, and so he's proven less. That's what I'm saying.
They're like four. And, man, I didn't realize Adam Thielen low-key had 1,000 yards this year.
He had a quiet 1,000 yards season.
There are only three or four, five receivers you would take over Ja'Marr Chase and Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Right.
They're kind of in the same category.
That's exactly what I was saying. Yeah. It's like you could Ja'Marr Chase, there's just more focus surrounding him, and obviously he had that amazing rookie season and like saved my fantasy team. Thank you, Ja'Marr. I will forever be indebted. But because he's younger, there's less this definitive like, yes, him over someone like Tyreek.
Yeah.
Or Hopkins or Adams.
How many receivers do you think had over 1,000 yards this year?
Eight.
28.
Stop.
28 Stop. Receivers over 1,000 yards.
God.
Yeah.
There are some names in there that I truly am not going to know.
Nah, you know all these names.
But there are names that would truly shock me. Who's like, go to like 25, 24. Like, who would be some that you
None
would never...
None of these are going to shock you. Well, maybe this one, Calvin Ridley.
Would not have guessed. Obviously, the ceiling is certainly over 1,000 yards.
Number 28 is Terry McLaurin.
Oh, okay, yeah. I would have guessed he'd actually be higher.
Everyone else... You know these names.
Next up, Penei Sewell and the Lions. The Lions spending some money today. Have agreed to a 4-year, $112 million extension, which includes $85 million guaranteed. So after making Amon-Ra St. Brown the highest paid wide receiver, the Lions have now made Penei Sewell the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. I didn't know they had money like that.
Oh, they got money.
They got
money.
They just got paid money, and they don't have rent due. You know what I mean? That middle of the month paycheck that comes through.
And big ups to Rob in American Samoa. He texts in all the time, and Penei is from American Samoa as well. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, man, the Polys can play some football, man. Your teammate complete unless you got like two or three of them things on your team, man. I'm happy for Sewell. I feel connected to him for some reason. I know he went to Oregon, right? But for some reason, I feel like he's like a Northwesterner, man. I'm happy for this dude.
He is, in a way.
He's from America,
claiming
Samoa.
Oregon. If someone went to Oregon, you know, also, I noticed this when I was looking at the roster for the Raiders. If the Raiders draft Michael Penix, they'll have quarterbacks on their roster from Oregon, Washington State, and Washington.
Really?
Yeah.
That is the most Northwest thing possible.
Truly. I'm sticking with the Lions for this last one. Even though Detroit just paid Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, there are no imminent plans to pay Jared Goff. Sorry, Jared.
Nah, you know they got Hendon Hooker waiting over there, and he's... I look at Hendon Hooker and the way that he plays, and it's comparable to Goff. I think obviously he's a bit more mobile if you watch the film, but their style is pretty much the same. And I think this is a good move. If you're going to pay Amon-Ra St. Brown, you're going to pay Sewell. You can't have all three.
Yeah.
Because you look at the year that Jared Goff has put together. If he has another year like that, he's going to demand $45 million a year and get overpaid, but well-deserved.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. You know how people have what they call their old man yells at cloud moment? It's basically get off my lawn when you just have a moment where you go, is the question I just asked just purely reflective of my age? I've got one of those questions for you guys next. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now, free to stream beyond your wildest dreams, free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber, your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen. on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Curtis, I'm going to bring you in for part of this conversation too, because I will fully admit I did not watch as many sports in the 90s as did you and Bump. I'm very youthful. It doesn't matter that you're
young. Because you were born in 99, you know?
Exactly. How could you? Thank you so much.
89.
Okay. Curtis, can you lower your voice? Matt, will you please turn his mic off?
You just said you were going to bring me in.
I am bringing you in. So I'm going to throw you guys a question. So I was actually talking with Derek about this the other day because he is not like the biggest current sports fan, but loved sports in the 90s and fully maintains that 90s were the best decade for sports. Mm. So I was thinking about it. I was like, I could totally see that argument, even though I love sports now. So this is my old man yells at cloud moment. Were sports better in the 90s? Real question. Right. Answer it sincerely.
All right. They were better in ways, I think. They were better in football because you could really mess up. You could really strike fear into guys going across the middle. You could body slam quarterbacks. You could clothesline people. It was violent. And I look at all, like my buddy CJ Marsh, his dad Marsh played for the Oakland Raiders. I listen to him tell stories about just how it was to be a Raider and how violent it was. And I loved watching football in the 90s. I grew up watching football in the 90s. It was great. Same thing with basketball. Charles Oakley and the New York Knicks just bullying people. You got the Pistons. They're late 80s. I guess it seeped into the 90s a little bit, right? Just the physicality was at an extreme in the 90s, even before that when we were talking football. Imagine what they were doing in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in football. But in my lifetime, watching sports in the 90s, it was like, you can't be scared playing this game. Now, you get to the 2000s, the 2010s, and the 2020s, these athletes are a lot more technical than those athletes were back in the day. They're a lot more skilled. You got more information. It's all about offense. It's all about scoring. Defense is at a minimum. You look at the NBA right now. Curtis, they got teams averaging 120 points a game in the NBA right now.
If it's not a three, it's not worth shooting.
Remember right? When it was like a high score was 85 to 80. Oh, man, they really got it going now. So I think it was better in a way that you could physically impose your will on people. Now you can't do much of that.
I think a lot of the luster of sports in the 90s came from us not knowing as much as we know now in terms of like stats, in terms of that, but also in terms of what we know about these athletes. Like we didn't know anything about these superstar athletes. And I think that kind of made the viewing experience a little better. Like I didn't know who was dating who. I didn't know like so-and-so was taking steroids. Yeah, exactly. TMZ didn't exist. So you didn't know that Michael Jordan like had a gambling problem until years later, right? Like there was an ignorance that we all had as sports fans back then that, I mean, we're never going to get back because there's just so much information on everybody now.
I think rivalries were different because free agency didn't exist in the early 90s. In the NFL, I don't know what the case was. I think in the NFL it was 94 or 95. I don't know about the NBA. I don't know about MLB. But I think that part of it, and I'm wondering what you guys think, was also that like players stayed with teams longer. You had more of a connection with that player. And players genuinely did not like other teams. Like, if you were, like, when I think of how Wyman talks about when he was with the Seahawks, like, you had a genuine dislike for the Chiefs or for, you know, whoever. I know he went on to play for Denver, but, like, there was a genuine hate there.
Oh, yeah, and it was real. It was, people were a lot more loyal to their teams when they were playing for them. So I think that's what kind of built that up. 1988 was the first year of free agency, I believe, in the NBA. Not sure about the NFL. But you're right, free agency kind of mixes things up a little bit because literally we saw Leonard Williams go from a New York Giant to a Seattle Seahawk in a year, and it happens throughout all sports. So that definitely has something to do with it. I like Curtis's point of just you were just focused on ball. You weren't focused on Taylor Swift in the suite. You weren't really focused on that Super Bowl halftime. It wasn't even a thing like that. I mean, Whitney Houston kind of and Michael Jackson popped it off and really got things going. But just the culture surrounding sports was different. It was more about the game than anything else. And I think now, like you guys pointed out, you bring in a whole bunch of other factors, man. I don't think it makes it worse. It just makes it different.
So
it's
that's
a different viewing experience.
What I was going to say, something some of the old heads aren't going to like hearing. What's better now?
Man, me personally, I think the athletes are better now. So, therefore, the product is better. I don't like some of the rules, but that's just evolution, man. Imagine if guys were still, we still saw the same formations, the same type of quarterbacks, the same type of running backs, the same defenses that we saw 20 years
ago. Fans today would think that's boring.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? The game has to advance, and people get the training's different. The nutrition is different. Guys are playing longer. I think it's tough, man, because I appreciate so much. I appreciate the 90s so much because of the physicality. But skill-wise, these dudes are just better.
I mean, you definitely didn't have, Patrick Mahomes throwing to when Tyreek Hill was with the Chiefs. Like, that kind of connection was less common. There was no Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Curtis, what's actually better now?
I'd say the TV viewing experience. Like, go back and watch a game that's on ESPN Classic. You're going to get bored watching it. Yes, because you know the outcome of it, but also the picture quality is terrible. The graphics are really old. Like, you don't get to see the quality of replay. Like, the TV viewing experience is night and day different from where it was in the 90s. Maybe that's also kind of a bad thing, too, because now we get to see these high-definition replays, and it slows the game down and whatnot. But I would much rather watch a sporting event on my TV in 2024 than I would in 1994.
Specifically on, close your ears, Wyman and Bob, Apple TV.
God, the picture quality.
I'm just going to be honest with you guys.
Ridiculous.
It's better than being in person.
Apple TV's cameras are better than my own vision. Like, I don't know how. It's like I put on glasses.
You know what I imagine? I imagine the cameras they have. Because you know like how they say, like in Japan, they get like the PS5 like a year or two before
it's
we
like
get
it. Like it's they like got that. Something.
Like they got something that no one else has.
I don't know what it is. They figured it out. They're using cameras they probably use to explore space rocks or something. I don't know what, but those games are absolutely amazing. All right, we're taking a look around the AL West. No, we're not. Around the NFC West with Fox Sports NFC West reporter Eric Williams next. Don't go anywhere.